Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Hey, Andy Reid, head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. What do you see on defense from the Houston Texans?
I mean, the first thing that jumps out at you is speed. That front can run. We didn't have a chance to play against Zero last year, or last time we played him a couple weeks back. And he's fast also as a linebacker, and he's kind of their main play caller there. So, you know, but he can, the speed of the D-line, the linebackers, just jump out at you. And they're real good, the hands of the secondary. Those guys, they catch the ball. You don't see a lot of bobbles or drops or that. They, if you're presenting it close, they can go up and snag it.
Yeah, if anything, that was the worst part of the Texans picking off the Chargers four times in that game. That's why I was down on it. I thought after two, I was like, hey, we don't want Mahomes and Reed to have a real quick reminder here, a stark reminder of facing an opportunistic defense that we really got to be on our P's and Q's.
Yeah.
All right, guys? Hey, maybe, Derek, bat down that last one, okay?
Yeah.
Maybe just, let these guys kind of coast on through and feel like, well, here we go. He's basically got a bye week versus the Texans this week. No. So it's very obvious that, yes, there's a lot of speed out on the field there, and the Texans are a very opportunistic defense. They led the league in interceptions, or did they end up second in interceptions? Whatever it was.
They intercepted a lot of balls, yeah.
I don't think, as much as Chiefs fans or anybody else might be taking the Texans lightly, I don't think for a second that Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid are taking the defense lightly. If you're a quarterback, you don't like throwing interceptions, and they've got very recent proof and evidence of the Texans' ability to do that. You just gotta keep doing what you did last week, though. Man, if that defense keeps playing the way they were playing. And especially if, you know, the nice thing was that they fixed their issues in the run defense on the first drive. They were having some issues with their defensive tackles getting trapped and whammed, all the same stuff we've been seeing the last few weeks. With Azeez Alshire back out there on the field with all of the starters versus a playoff caliber football team, they fixed it. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Azeez Alshire was on the field when they fixed this thing that's been an issue the last few weeks. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to what does this team look like with Azeez Alshire versus the Chiefs offense.
Yeah, and I think that's going to – Azeez Alshire being back is big when it comes to – I think that the biggest thing that – if we're looking at the previous Chiefs game, because it was fairly recently, like the biggest thing that I would try to cure would be the defense's ability to get off the field in the fourth quarter. You know, the Chiefs were able to burn that clock. The last 11 or 12 minutes of the game was them just burning the clock, converting third down after third down after third down. The Chiefs are not a great offense in terms of scoring. They're middle of the pack. They're 15th in scoring in the league, but they're second on converting third downs. And so if this gets into a game in the fourth quarter where the Chiefs have to play keep away, like they were able to do against you back on December the 21st, and you're not able to get off of the field, that's a big problem, obviously. So I think that to me, if there's one thing I could cure from that first game, it would be that. Because to my recollection, I don't think they hit you with a bunch of big chunk plays. You know, DeAndre Hopkins had a few catches to move the chains. Travis Kelce was just kind of annoying paper cut kind of catches, but he was also somewhat of a factor. But I don't remember Xavier Worthy getting massive plays in that game. Hollywood Brown, I don't even remember if he played in that game.
I'm actually kind of glad happened. Given the circumstances, I'm glad that Ladd McConkey had that big touchdown.
Yeah.
Because I think the Texans defense needs to be reminded that, hey, we've been really, really, really good in a lot of ways this year. these huge chunk plays have undone a lot of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it's you, and part of it is that some of that's just been because they've had younger guys in the back, in the defensive backfield. Mm-hmm. So those guys have played really well, but they've got moments where they've played like rookies. It's a reminder to them that, all right, man, as awesome as that game was, it could have been a lot better if we had just been a little bit more aware on that. Like, Ladd McConkey, that could have been an interception on that play.
Yes.
Instead of a touchdown. You got to play all four quarters. And when it, especially when you're facing a guy like Xavier Worthy, you got to play mentally sharp the entire game. So, there's no shortage of footage where you can watch the Chiefs and see exactly how they can take advantage of you with that.
Here's Patrick Mahomes and his thoughts on the Texans defense.
Yeah, I think what everybody's kind of known. I mean, that defense is extremely real. They have a great quarterback and a great coach, and it's we knew when we played in this last time. It was a hard fought game, and they get after the quarterback really well. They have really good secondary players, and the linebackers fly around. So it'll be a great challenge for us, and we'll have to play our best football.
The frustrating thing about the Chiefs game also was that they got some really good pass rushes. They didn't get Mahomes on the ground. That's part of Mahomes and he's just really good at scrambling, taking the yardage when it's there. Mm-hmm. So the contained pass rush and all that stuff really matters. But ultimately, it's not enough just to get pressure. You got to get him on the ground. You got to or hit his arm as he's throwing the ball to force him into some of those errors. The Texans defense right now, for all the issues that they've had with injuries, including still Christian Harris. Somebody on the text line just asked about Christian Harris, whether he played last time or not. Christian Harris only played 7 snaps in last week's game. So it wasn't like he was a big part of that defensive effort. I think you got to look at him at this point as it's a bonus. If his calf is functioning properly and if it's okay, maybe he's a big factor in the game, but I don't think you can really lean on him being in there. The encouraging thing is that when Andy Reid's talking about the speed of the defense, he's talking about Azeez Elshire and Henry Toa at linebacker and the way those guys play. It's just they're not, you know, going into that game versus the Chargers, I thought, man, the Chargers, they like to try to be an old-school football team. They've got big-bodied dudes. They want to run the ball. And I was worried about the Texans having to play nickel all the time. They had to play nickel all the time, and they were still really good against the run. So, and again, I don't think that happens without Azeez Elshire out there.
Hollywood text message. Hollywood did play in the last game. That's right. Texter also, it's Nico's texting in, saying Worthy scored a TD when he said the Texans yelled out the coverage. That's right. Xavier Worthy said they yelled out zone, zone.
And so he
just ran into a spot there.
And I think some people made a big deal out of that. That happens sometimes. You're trying to make adjustments. Now, that's where the Chiefs do a good job of taking advantage of motion and everything else, and that's when you end up getting calls from the defenders who are communicating. So, you know, the next level for that for the defense is when you want to start making dummy calls whenever possible. It just that takes time and that takes veteran savvy. You know, you can call zone sometimes even is because both the two defensive backs know that it's not zone, but you just say it as a dummy call.
Yep.
I don't think the Texans are quite there yet because they have so much youth.
Yeah. A texter also saying, do you guys know if Lassiter played in week 16 against the Chiefs? Yes. He was the one that was in zone right in front of where Worthy slipped behind him on that touchdown. Yes. So he definitely played. He definitely played in that game. One of the fun battles in this game will be Nico Collins versus Trent McDuffie, the Kansas City Chiefs top corner. They have him travel with top wide receivers. Here was McDuffie yesterday talking about the challenge of going against Nico Collins.
I kind of was saying this earlier. I love going against players like this who I call him a complete receiver. You know, he's big, he's physical, he's fast, good hands. His connection with CJ, you can tell, is at an all-time high. They're kind of clicking on all cylinders, and he's their number one receiver. And that's really why you want to play this game, go against the best competition and a game that means a lot in the playoffs. So excited to go against him. You know what he's going to come into this game with and ready to go compete.
Yeah, so Nico in that game had 7 receptions for 60 yards, 10 targets. Tank Dell was having his best game of his season so far because he had those 6 receptions on 98 yards. The run game wasn't as bad as it's been at times for the Texans, but it certainly wasn't great. Mixon only had 57 yards rushing. I think that ends up being a big factor in this game because the old cliche, man, try to keep Pat Mahomes off the field. This is the kind of game where time of possession matters.
Yeah.
When it comes down to, especially in the fourth quarter, given Pat Mahomes as few cracks at the bat as possible, if they can build on what they did last week and start to be able to lean into the run more, that hopefully could be a big difference and a big difference between this time and last
time. Dude, if they could be the team that's possessing the ball for the last 6 minutes of the game, that would be incredible.
You know who had the big reception in that game, Sean? I was trying to remember. It was Samaje Perine.
The wheel route.
He went 30-plus yards on that one.
The wheel route on that last drive. That's right. Yeah. That was the play where not you, Seth, but you, all of us, we're going to lose this game. you know what I mean? Like, that's the play.
Yeah.
So I think it was on third down. It was,
I leaned in hard. Sammy had brought some Domino's pizza to the live lounge up there, and I ate one of his entire pizzas. Thank you, Sammy. I don't feel guilty about it now. I used to feel guilty about it when Sammy was just a college kid. Now that he's a lawyer, I'm like, oh, you only brought two pizzas?
And can you no disrespect to Domino's, man, but what about some designer upscale pizza? You know, how about a little deep dish? You know what I'm saying? Like, although Domino's gets the job done, I would say.
I like Domino's. I feel like, I don't know. I don't know if I've yet met a pizza chain whose pizza I don't like. I've got no issue with any of it. Oh, it's dough, it's cheese, and it's a bunch of sauce.
Yeah.
Like, all right, it's hard to screw it up, you know?
Yeah.
Now, there's individual pizzerias sometimes that just are poorly managed, but.
Yeah.
I'm not a pizza snob.
No.
And the good stuff, like, I love Star Pizza, but man, I feel like a boa constrictor having just eaten an entire wildebeest after I eat it. There's just so much.
Oh.
There's just so much in my belly.
I can't
control myself.
We got to go to their buffet sometime. Tuesday and Friday.
I can't do that.
Yeah, let's go, Seth. Come on. Let's get come on. A little retro time. Old Seth.
I got to back off on the sodium is the biggest issue.
Yeah.
Not with just Star Pizza, any pizza in general.
Yeah.
I got to watch the sodium these days.
One of the things that I'm excited about with the Texans, independent of this game on Saturday, that I will be excited about even if the Texans lose, and even if they lose lopsidedly on Saturday, is that we are not one of the teams, we don't root for one of the teams that's on this hamster wheel at either head coach and or quarterback. This was Kevin O'Connell yesterday, I believe, talking about, it was either yesterday or right after the game on Monday, talking about Sam Darnold's time in Minnesota. Take a listen to this.
A winning quarterback this year and the consistency at the times he had it throughout the year and what that meant for our team, because I think that can stay with him moving forward as he goes back to work. Proud of him, proud of really everybody in that locker room, but Sam and the journey him and I went on this year will always, be something that's a special place in my heart for sure.
Okay, that last part is where people were like, oh yeah. Like the whole chatter about Sam Darnold like 4 weeks ago where they're like, well, they could franchise tag him and J.J. McCarthy could sit for another year. Like, I hear that last part and like this year will always hold a special place in my heart. Like Kevin O'Connell sounded like a guy who's ready to move on to J.J. McCarthy next year in that cut.
Yeah. Well, and that would be the likely. You draft a guy, you draft a quarterback in the first round. Typically, that's the plan for the future, and you got to figure it out.
No, Sam Darnold was like in the running for the MVP a month ago, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But like, given the way he's played over the last couple games,
he's
clearly not the guy that. I guess it's not like a huge leap that, okay, we're going to move on to J.J. McCarthy now. Now, the question is, all right, what kind of offers does Sam Darnold actually get? And how competitive would the Vikings really have to be to bring him back and be a bridge quarterback to him? Maybe that's still in the cards. I don't know.
That would be weird. Like, as good a year as he had, like, Sam Darnold to come back to the same team and be a backup. Like, I think some team's going to offer him a starting job. You know, like, there's...
As a bridge quarterback.
Yeah. There just aren't that many good quarterbacks in this draft. You know, like, he'll be a star. I think the Steelers could sign him and not draft a quarterback, you know?
Yeah, do they have Justin Jefferson? I can't remember. That's the biggest question.
I'm not saying it's a great solution. I'm just saying...
Right. Yeah.
You know who's not a big fan of Sam Darnold? Paul Allen. Not the deceased billionaire, The play-by-play guy for the Minnesota Vikings. I love stuff like this where radio guys go off, and it's usually the color analyst that does this. But this is the play-by-play guy in Minnesota, Paul Allen, after one of Sam Darnold's 9 sacks that he took.
Two receivers left. Rams blitz. Darnold gets away from it. Steps up in the pocket. He's holding it too long.
Just run.
Throw it, man.
Just run.
Paul. At the 25-yard line, he's sacked for a 5th time.
All he's got to do is pull that thing down and run and get as much positive yardage as he can. There were 5 to 7 yards easy there to be made. We saw Buffalo do this to him all day long because they're not always disciplined in their lanes. But if he pulls this thing down right there, he has a good five, seven.
That's good, Ben. I Peter Bursich is the color analyst. I know him because he was a Notre Dame guy. But the play-by-play guy screaming out, throw the ball, man!
Yeah, not the color commentator, but the actual play-by-play guy. It feels a little bit like Andre Ware. We get that same element with Andre.
Oh, yeah.
No.
We get the inverse. We get Andre doing that here.
Oh, no!
Yeah, here's my favorite example of that one.
Stroud gets the snap. CJ with pressure. CJ scrambling out to the left, now back to the right, runs into Titus Howard. Ball comes out. Somebody's got to fall on it. Texans have it inside their 35-yard line. A disaster on third down.
Titus has got to stop watching and quitting on plays, watching the action when he gets himself beaten. That's what happens when you just stop and start watching and somebody's still playing. You're trying to get out of the way. You run right back into him.
It looked like Titus almost pulled the ball out trying to pull
CJ
with him.
Mark, it happens way too much.
Can you imagine Paul Allen and Andre Ware on a broadcast together? Oh, my God. Were the teams not playing well?
Like the two guys in the balcony in
the Muppet Show.
In the Muppet Show,
Statler and Waldorf. Just cracking bad jokes.
What were their names?
Statler and Waldorf.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a big Muppet Show.
Sounds like those are a couple of rich old guy names.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, you think?
Statler and Waldorf.
Statler and Waldorf. Well, I am just happy. The reason I played the Darnold cut, I am happy we're not in those conversations anymore. You know what I mean? Like, okay,
yeah.
Like if you're the Steelers or you're the Raiders or you're one of these other teams, especially teams that are looking at this draft, and it's like, okay, it's Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, neither of whom are viewed in the same realm as the top guys that have been drafted the last couple years. And then it's Quinn Ewers after that. You know, like it's a bad quarterback draft. So that's, Sam Darnold might be one of the better options out there, and he ain't a good option. Like that's...
You know, Sam Darnold in the... Because it felt like the entire second half of the season, the shine was off a little bit. And you look at his yards per attempt ended up being just like abysmal, like below 6 in multiple games there down the stretch. And it felt like, all right, whatever ambush element there was to, hey, quarterback in a new system, first time we're seeing him, it takes a while for the league to catch up. So I've always felt like the best strategy, if you don't feel great about your quarterback, is like, let's say you had Gardner Minshew and Sam Darnold on the same team. It's just, okay, Sam Darnold's going to be the first half of the season quarterback. And then second half of the season back quarterback is going to be Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, you trade for Joe Flacco, right? Or you bring Joe Flacco in off the street right before the playoffs. Yeah. Just ambush him because you just don't know exactly how they're going to use the guy. He's good enough, but like, hey, just throw him in there.
Yeah, you treat your team like a Broadway calendar. We're like, we're starting the season with Sam Darnold. He's only here for 4 weeks. You got to get, if you want to watch Sam Darnold. And then the next show is Gardner Minshew and then Flacco.
And then Beverly D'Angelo. At the end,
We do Hamilton for the last 2 weeks. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Hey, Justin Verlander's gone. He's headed to the Giants. He revealed the reason why he was so banged up and injured last year. I'm curious how Astro fans feel when they hear the reason. Will they feel a little jilted? We'll have that for you coming up next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so baseball season, pitchers and catchers were about a month away. The Astros are probably pretty close to done here. I think most people would like to see them pick up an outfielder. We'll see what happens. Justin Verlander will not be an Astro anymore. He signs with the San Francisco Giants. Did an interview. I saw it on MLB.com. where he talked about the culture that he was so impressed with and why he signed with San Francisco.
Quite frankly, before Buster called me, I wasn't really in my consideration. And then in doing some research after Buster called, obviously immediately you're like, man, really tough division. That's obviously true. But I think that this team has a lot of upside that is maybe a bit overlooked. I just think that there's a really good chance that this team can do something special. And from everything that I've heard, the guys, the culture that's been built in this organization is something special.
All right, so that's Verlander. Buster is Buster Posey, obviously, the former catcher for the Giants who's now in their front office.
He's a president.
Yeah. So
of the Giants.
Of the Giants.
Not the United States.
Not the United States yet. So I thought that was interesting. Like, it feels like Verlander on that quote is going in far more blindly to this one than when he came to the Astros back in 2017. Like,
well, it's similar in that when he went to the Astros, he got a call from Dallas Keuchel that kind of explained, one, that no, it wasn't. The city was not going to be completely submerged by the time Justin got
there. That's right. It was Harvey. Yeah, yeah.
But also, it was a conversation with Dallas Keuchel that kind of made him feel good about going there. Mm-hmm. So likewise, Buster Posey, former player, I'm sure, I don't know how close they are as friends or what have you, but it sounds like that was enough for him. That maybe Verlander's a guy who just wants to be sure there's at least whatever the situation he stepped into with the Mets, that it's not going to be.
It's not. That's a good point. Yeah, because that was a mess.
It was, because there were reports that it sounded like the culture was just a little bit off. You know, there was that story that Verlander would suggest to the Mets staff that, hey, the Astros did this thing that seemed to help a lot. Mm-hmm. Maybe you guys should try doing this. And the Mets were like, nah,
yeah,
we do our things our own way. No. So I don't know. Maybe that matters.
We got to go give $200 million to somebody else who can't play. Yeah. So this was Verlander. I thought this was interesting. Revealed why he thinks he got injured a bunch last season.
I've changed a lot of my offseason program. I have, for the first time in my career, I've not put down a ball. I kept throwing all offseason, and that was to help the shoulder issue that I had. And it was totally avoidable. It was my fault. You know, I've always been somebody who just doesn't, I set down the ball and don't pick it up again for a few months. And then I've always been very lucky that I just pick it up and start throwing. Well, at 41, that caught up with me. So, that was an adjustment that I've made that I feel like is paying big dividends already. I'm It's funny. I was having a conversation today with my throwing partner and just talking about how miles ahead of where I was last year at this time. Honestly, this time last year was my first game of like real catch. And, you know, I'm already up to 92 and trying to pull the reins a little bit, not overdo it.
I guess that it makes sense, and it's good that he changed the strategy and everything. At the end of the day, he's an older pitcher, and you can change your strategy and accommodate for things, but he's going to be 42 years old this year. And it feels bad because it feels like I'm gonna be like, yeah, he's going to get injured. I don't mean that at all. It's just, it is what it is. He's 42 years old. I'm not convinced that that's a different strategy, but it doesn't mean it's the right strategy. I don't think he should be so hard on himself.
That's the thing.
Basically,
okay, yeah.
He was doing what he would always do. And you would think, like, yeah, as you get older, if anything, okay, maybe you should have started easing into it a little earlier. But, like, more work isn't usually the answer for an older guy. I would say take it easy on yourself, Justin. If what you were doing was the same thing that led you to multiple all-star appearances over the course of 20 years of playing baseball, I wouldn't say it was my fault. It was like, okay, I could have adjusted to it.
That audio became compelling to me as I'm listening to it yesterday. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. So he's totally changed. I mean, like, totally changed his strategy. You go from putting a ball down for 3 months and not touching it to throwing every day or throwing regularly. That's a complete shift in strategy. And I totally agree with what you said, Seth. I'm like, I don't know that ultimately the solution for a 42-year-old is throwing more.
That's
you know?
How, yeah. But, this but, is how I feel about, like, if I'm anybody, you know, if you're in your 40s and you're like, oh, I've got some arthritis in my knees and I never had this issue before, I think what I'll do is start running more.
I'll do a 5K.
That'll fix it.
Doing a weekly 5K. Yeah. So, but I'm listening to that. I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. Uh-huh. I'm nodding my head. And then he goes, totally avoidable. My fault. And I'm like, ooh, I think I'm supposed to be angry now. Wait a second. He's apologizing for something.
I guess maybe he had gotten advice. This is what I choose to believe.
Yeah.
That the Astros gave him the advice that, like, hey, man, you should really ramp up more. You should start earlier and ramp up. And the Astros crack training staff are the ones who told him that. And he said, piss on you. Piss on all of
you. Do you have multiple Cy Youngs? I have multiple Cy Youngs.
Yeah. So it was your fault, Justin Verlander.
The other thing that I feel bad bringing this up, but, you know, he's not an Astro anymore. And I think he'll, even if he were to hear this, he would take it good naturedly. I think. I don't know. But I did think when he talked about just putting the ball down and not doing anything for a few months, I thought about how he looked when he came back from being gone for a couple of months during the season.
Yeah.
And you and I were like, jersey sticks out a little bit more over the belt.
He's never been an impressive body guy.
Right.
You know, he's never been fat or anything, but he's always kind of had a dad. From the time he was in his early 20s, he kind of had a dad bod, you know?
Right.
Generally, I think with the older athletes, it's usually the improvements you want to see is, okay, they take better care of their body.
Yeah.
You're going to tweak your routines a little bit and everything, but more than anything, you got to take advantage of all your recovery time and not be carrying around any extra pounds. We'll have to monitor this closely in spring training and do a body composition analysis if he's throwing earlier, but he's also carrying extra weight, I would say that's a bad sign.
Probably so. It's going to be a weird season, man. Like, this is the most like nucleus culture foundational Astro that's gone out of the building at one time, probably since the start of the golden era, you know, like since, you know, like 2018, like you lose or 2019, like I forget, you lose Charlie Morton 1 year and then you lose Garrett Cole 1 year. It was always like one guy a year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now it's like Bregman, Tucker, Verlander. I mean, we've experienced losing Verlander before, but I'll throw him in there because of how I think the fan base feels about him. I mean, those are three of like the six or seven most, like maybe eight or nine, like most foundational guys since 2017.
Yeah.
And they're all leaving at the same time. It's just, that's going to feel weird.
And then just trading Tucker away instead of playing it out to the very end.
Yeah.
That to me was the emphatic closing of the door, not necessarily the closing of a window, but the closing of the door on that era, including the way they manage the team. That it's just the really unfortunate part of it and the sad part of it is that it's looking more and more like it didn't have to be that way for Alex Bregman.
Yeah.
If Bregman ends up getting a deal for the same or less than what the Astros offered him, man, what a shame. But and then ultimately, the Astros fan in me says, yeah, it's a shame emotionally, but who knows? You know, maybe you solidify both corner infield positions, which, okay, maybe you don't feel as great about Paredes as Bregman, but you've got actual stability at both corner infield spots. The sum total of that could pay dividends and feel better about it than last year with Bregman.
I think it's easy to feel better about Paredes at the price they have him at than feel better about Bregman at $30 million a year or whatever it was going to be. You know,
right, and it's just where that, and it allows you to also have stability at first base, get an outfielder at some point, and see where it all leads.
Yeah, like I think in his heart of hearts, if you were to ask Jim Crane, because the philosophy all rolls down from him in terms of contracts, length of deals, age of guys, things like that, which is what made the Abreu deal so weird, because Abreu was old, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But flushing that aside, would you rather have Bregman at the contract you offered him and then probably some solution less than Christian Walker at first base, or have it the way it is now at the corners with Walker locked up for 3 years, Paredes under team control for 3 years? I think Jim Crane likes operating in 3 and 4 year windows way more. I'm not breaking any news here. Way more than, okay, I got to pay this guy till 37 years old over here.
Oh yeah,
court,
yeah, that's his whole deal, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So Jose Abreu, if he's currently a free agent,
there's a lot of footage that surfaced of him in the Mexican League this year on social media, and all of it that I've seen has been good. I don't know what his numbers are, but so who knows? I actually admire the fact that he's still grinding and going after it.
Dude, honestly, I admire the fact that he was willing to go down and work out with the rookie league. You could tell he felt bad about the way he was playing. And it wasn't like for a lack of effort or like that he had lost the passion for that. I never once felt like, oh, here's a guy that just took some money to come in and steal for a couple of years. It bothered him. It stinks. It's just like in nature, Sean. None of these animals, very few of them die a peaceful death.
No.
You end up getting eaten by a coyote at some point.
It happens,
point,
man. Yeah. It happens.
He got eaten by a coyote
in
Houston.
He
did. By one of our urban coyotes.
He did. He got $57 million for it. Not bad. Not bad work, if you can get it. Not the coyote part, the getting paid part.
Dude, watch. Oh, American Primeval. Speaking of getting eaten and killed.
Oh, you mentioned that to me the other day.
On Netflix?
Yeah.
Oh, it's intense. It is an intense. It's basically about all of the conflict between the Mormons, the U.S. government, the Shoshone, and I can't remember the name of the other tribe. Everything all coming together on the American frontier in the 1800s. And it's just brutal. It is brutal. But it's the most accurate depiction yet I've seen of why Utah Jazz fans are the way they are.
Okay.
I just like, all right, I get it. I get it. I get it.
Okay.
I get it. Of all the movies I've watched about Jazz fans, this is the one.
This is the one that shows it. Okay.
Yeah.
Not Big Love back in the day?
No.
Yeah,
no. That was a kinder, gentler Jazz fan. This is the psychotic will kill for any reason to justify their own beliefs. Yes.
That's what I would tell, you know, Texan fans who are preemptively complaining about the referees in this game on Saturday against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
That's who you sound like. You sound like Jazz fans. That if that doesn't shock at least half of you into stop doing that, then I don't know what to tell you. But you sound
I'm okay.
like Jazz fans.
I'm okay with it because it bothers Chiefs fans so much.
Yeah,
true. It drives them insane.
Forget what I say. Dump that.
I say keep it up. Keep trolling. Whether you mean it, whether you're genuine in your belief or not, just keep tweeting about it because it drives them insane.
I love it. The biggest shift in the two teams, personnel-wise, from the game 4 weeks ago to the game coming up on Saturday. C.J. Stroud, D'Amico Ryan spoke about that. We'll hear from them coming up next.
Live from the Mo Karam Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Man, that'd be huge, you know. I didn't know that, you know, but I think that'd be a huge accomplishment. And, you know, this team were really motivated to, you know, go up there and play some good ball. And, you know, a great Kansas City team who's been in these moments forever. So, you know, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take a lot of, you know, execution and, you know, get that done. So, got to be on our A game.
Were you surprised? CJ said he didn't know that this team had never made it to the AFC title game before?
I was a little surprised at first, and then I think he'd probably just never heard it framed that way. Mm-hmm. If he thought about it, he probably would be like, you know, CJ's kind of like, by 22-year-old standards especially, he's kind of a football historian.
Yes.
I think if you asked him, hey, CJ, if the Texans ever been to a conference championship game, he would have thought it and thought in his head and thought, oh, no, they haven't. But I do think it's notable in that I don't think that D'Amico has been using that as some kind of a rallying call,
yeah,
which I like. I don't like using historical things that you haven't done or whatever as a motivational tool, because it's almost implanting in your brain subconsciously or consciously that, like, oh, this team is we're losers.
That's
we're
negative losers. Energy. Like, it's negative
anything
energy.
Like that. Yeah. Even though it's not like awful toxic negative energy or anything, yeah, but it's just not, let's look forward. Let's look forward.
Yeah. What I probably would not like CJ to find out, you know, if he didn't know about not getting to the AFC title game, what he doesn't need to find out is that they haven't really been competitive in any of these divisional round games either. I shouldn't say that. The very first one, they were competitive against the Ravens. Back in 2011, when they lost by 7 and T.J. Yates threw 3 picks in that game. They were competitive in that one.
And they were having a really good game through 3 quarters in New England.
2016, the Brock Osweiler year.
Osweiler. And really, remember, they had Brady on the ropes. Brady threw up that prayer of a ball that could have as easily been a pick six as a reception. But of course, you know, Brady being Brady, I kind of feel like it looked like it was a duck, but he probably knew he could get away with a duck at that point.
Yeah.
Like they made life really difficult. Ultimately, I don't think the margin ended up being close, but at the very least, that was an entertaining game.
It was an entertaining game. No, you're right. The Patriots, the spread on that game was like 17. And the Patriots, I think, ended up covering the spread in that game. But you're right. That game was close early in the fourth quarter. And at some point when the game was still hanging in the balance, Will Fuller dropped what would have been a walk-in bomb for a touchdown.
Well, early. They could have had a quick strike. Somebody dropped the ball early.
You're thinking of 2012. That was
sure.
James Casey let a ball go through his hands in the end zone.
That was in 2012.
That was 2012.
In the playoffs?
In the playoffs. Daniel Manning had a huge return on the opening kickoff.
That's right.
They started the game in the red zone for the Patriots, and James Casey dropped what would have been a touchdown pass.
I recalled and meant all those things.
You conflated the two Patriot losses.
No, okay. No, I remembered it. I just said it wrong or something like that. I don't know. Let me have this.
Let's just hope it doesn't look like 2019. That's all. I'm confident that this thing is going to be a close game. 9 is a lot of points, man. It's a lot of points for a team in the Chiefs that play a ton of close games.
And,
you know, that's a lot of points.
They play a bunch of close games, and I think even in my own mind, I was kind of like, well, yeah, but after that fourth quarter versus the Texans, look, they got on a roll. They didn't really. They went and they had a really impressive game versus the Steelers, but then they got rolled up with none of their starters playing by 30-plus points versus Broncos. But, I mean, I'm not worried. I mean, like, that was what it was. They were playing all their backups. But it does mean that, okay, if there's any such thing as a rust factor, a lot of these starters for the Chiefs haven't played, including Mahomes, will not have played meaningful football for 23 games.
Yes.
So hopefully there's some rust there.
Got to jump on them early, man. Got to jump on them early. Biggest change for the Texans, at least, personnel-wise, from that game to this game, Azeez Al-Shaair will play in this game. Here's C.J. Stroud on Azeez Al-Shaair's leadership.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, he's been a leader since the day one. So, like, that's the first thing and foremost is he's always been a leader. And just because he was out doesn't mean he was even leading. He was leading even when he was out. So, you know, and, you know, I think just in life, you know, until you make a mistake, you can't gain wisdom. So, you know, when you're on the stage, you make mistakes, you know, And, you know, you're held to, you know, what your actions, and, you know, you learn from them, you move on, you know. And I, one thing I'm happy for him, he's not living any guilt, any shame, and I'm proud of him for that, for just coming back and just playing really good. And he played great on Saturday. You know, we need him to play great again. He knows that. So his wisdom and his leadership and the ups and downs he's been in his life, you know, and the background he has, you know, that he grew up. A lot of people don't know Aziz's story. Like, Aziz don't really come from much. And you look at somebody like him, who was the oldest out of a lot of kids in his family. He's had to take care of a lot of his siblings. It ain't been easy, you know. So you make mistakes, you know what I mean? And it's all about how you answer it, you know, no matter what the mistake is. So, you know, I'm very proud of him. And, you know, he's going to be huge for us.
You know, one of the cool things about Aziz Alshire was if you search for it, there's a video of him talking to Mike Evans when Mike Evans was mic'd up. And Aziz Alshire goes up to him and expresses gratitude for all the work that Mike Evans has done in Tampa with, I think it with a lot of homeless initiatives and stuff, because Aziz Alshire at times had been like literally living under a bridge with his family.
Yeah.
Like he had a rough upbringing and got moved around a lot and everything. It was a nice moment for Mike Evans too, you know, Galveston kid, to see that. But Aziz is a guy that, It's a shame that the rest of the league or the fan base largely knows him because of the fallout from the Trevor Lawrence hit. And because it's just so far away. It's so different than how the rest of the league or like how the Texans know him and feel about him.
There will, my prediction is there will definitely be, the Texans are definitely going to play a primetime game next year or two or three or four, however many it'll be. And especially if there's a game against Jacksonville that's on a big stage, they will do someone, like one of the reporters will do a sit down with Aziz that does a deep dive on the fallout from the hit on Trevor Lawrence last year and bring up and blend it in with a story about his background. You know what I mean? Like there will be some sort of, it's going to end up being a feel good story out of all this. All the hatred that he's been getting. That's my prediction for next year, Seth. I think there's going to be one of those next year in one of the Texans' big primetime games. Here is D'Amico Ryans talking about Aziz Alshire.
Aziz has been a great vocal leader. He always shares a great message. He's great at articulating those messages to the players, and the players are very attentive when Aziz is talking. Right? When Aziz talks to the team, it always comes from the heart. It's heartfelt, it's sincere, and you can tell how much he cares about the guys just with his messages. So I know it resonates with the guys, and that's what a team is about, right? When your team leaders are standing up giving the messages, they go a lot further than what I have to say because they know my messages don't change. It's the same thing from when we started at training camp to now. Like, we're going to be consistent in messaging from me and what I expect of our guys, because I believe in winning. It takes a certain way to win games, and that doesn't change right from day one to where we are now. So really thankful for Aziz and his leadership, thankful for CJ, Will, the guys who step up and lead when it comes to being vocal leaders. Like, you need that. You need guys to do it the right way, but at times players need to hear from each other, and it means a lot more when they do that. So we have a lot of guys who aren't afraid to speak up and speak their mind to each other and pour out their hearts to each other.
All right, so my favorite thing about that audio right there is D'Amico Ryans D'Amico Ryans talking about himself as if he's like 65 years old. Like, D'Amico Ryans, like, yeah, my message gets stale. You know, they don't need to hear from me. They hear from, they, you know, they like hearing from Aziz. And I think, too, Aziz, the fact that one of my big concerns coming off of that 3-game suspension was, is this going to be something that in a way messes with Aziz Alshire? Is he going to be the same player coming into or coming back from that suspension, coming back in week 18 against the Titans, more importantly, coming back in the postseason against whoever the Texans play, ended up being the Chargers and now the Chiefs. You know, is it going to affect his style of play at all? Is it going to affect him mentally at all? And I think we've seen, you know, certainly with that Chargers game, we didn't see much of him in the Titans game, but certainly in that Chargers game, he looked like the old Aziz Alshire. So that's good. Now, that to me is the biggest change. If we're taking a look at the Week 16 game against the Chiefs, the 27-19 win, and we're looking at the handicapping of this game and looking at the, you know, just the personnel effects of this game, getting Aziz Alshire back in this game is absolutely massive. Text messages here. This goes back to our Astros conversation in the previous segment. But you have no outfielder, zero. And Peña is an average shortstop. I'm okay with Peña, but they need outfield help so bad. I would say about the Peña thing, you can't have an all-star at every position. And I acknowledge the outfield situation as well. So there is that. Hey, quick reminder. We mentioned this in headlines earlier. The Texans are hoping that you, Texan fans, can be out there on Friday at about noon for a send-off of the team as they head to the airport, as the buses leave and they head to the airport to go take on the Kansas City Chiefs. So you get all the information on it at HoustonTexans.com, I'm sure, or if you're a Texan fan, you're probably getting emails and push notifications about it. But the Texans are looking for the fans to be out there to send the team off in style as they head to Kansas City to try to do what they've never done before, which is get to the AFC title game. Look who's here. It's John Lopez.
Look who's here.
It's Reggie Atatula. What's up, fellas?
Oh, man. I got a question for Seth.
Okay, well, Seth dropped for a moment, so he's not there right now.
Oh. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I got a question for you.
What's okay. that about? Was he angered? Was he enraged? Did someone have to die?
The internet yeah. was angered and enraged, yeah.
So I imagine the ISP has to die.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So later in the show, which is, I guess they call those vertical teases, we're going to be talking about these nicknames that the Texans defensive line has.
Do they have nicknames?
Yeah, there was a big deal about it on social media.
Individual nicknames?
Every single one of them.
Oh, they all each have a nickname.
Yeah, they each have
a nickname. This is supposedly part of the motivational strategy for this defensive line.
Okay.
Yeah. Is donning or, you know, giving them all, knighting them in some way with nicknames that in some ways encapsulates their personality.
Who they are.
The question is actually probably better for you.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm like, we're going to talk about the nicknames. There's going to be a little twist that we're going to put to it that hopefully works. But either way, I was like, I don't know if Seth Payne ever had a nickname. And then I searched.
Is it in his Pro Football Reference?
I love going to one of his reference pages and saying, because there's always inevitably one that you're like, ain't nobody once called him that.
Well, that's part of the question. So I found two nicknames for Seth Payne. I covered him when he was here. Obviously, we've known him a long time, that stuff. Never knew it. Just take a stab. What would Seth Payne's nickname be?
The Big Intellectual.
That's very good.
I like that.
Yeah. The Big Ragu.
No chance he's been called the Big Ragu.
It says it.
What's it?
It.
That is an unfair use of pronoun. What is it? Who's telling you he's the Big Ragu?
The interweb. And Pope Zaza.
Well, Pope Zaza has his nickname on this show. In fact, Pope Zaza is going to have a segment coming up either Thursday or Friday this week.
Yeah. Did we get the appropriate headgear?
I would tell you except the internet.
So my question is, are those nicknames post-playing career?
Pope Zaza was like, Pope Zaza, the genesis of that came from Laramie Tunsil's advisor, Saint Omni.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, okay, we need to come up with nicknames for ourselves where the first name is some sort of
religious
title.
Capacity, yes.
Yeah, and the second one is a hotel chain. So I was Deacon Doubletree.
Yeah.
That didn't really stick as much
as Bishop Howard Johnson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Although that feels like that would actually be some bishop somewhere.
with the hyphenated name on the back of his jersey. Yeah.
Pro Football Reference doesn't have any.
Doesn't have any form? Yeah, yeah. The Big Ragu. The only thing that could come from...
Wait, Seth's middle name is Copeland?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, that's a good nick. That's a good middle name.
What's the Spanish version of Copeland?
Cope.
Okay, very good.
There you go.
that's a callback to yesterday's show. By the way, that throwback also, our friend John Philip Lopez was actually supposed to be Juan Felipe Lopez.
I heard you guys talking about that yesterday.
I give credit to my dad on that.
Yeah?
Because in that era, you know, there was obviously it was a different time.
Okay, yeah.
And he's like, no. John Philip.
Seth's back.
What's wrong with Copeland?
Nothing. I'm quite fond of it, actually. It's not what I would have imagined, but now I kind of see it.
Seth, Lopez came in today The defensive line on the Texans, all apparently they've all given themselves nicknames.
Or the line coach has.
The line coach has given them nicknames. And so John Lopez did the research on whether or not you ever had a nickname. And apparently there's some corner of the internet that has two of them for you. I'm excited that one of them was Pope Zaza. So yeah. That's taken a foothold at least in some corner of the internet.
The other one, and Seth, you know, I was in the room when we played and followed you and we're friends and all that. And I never knew this. The Big Ragu.
No, that was that's the nickname of the guy, the former Steelers offensive lineman that was the guy who was the judge or whatever in the Aziz Alshire deal. So somewhere, did AI tell you this?
Yes.
Okay. What AI did was they took some tweet that I had taken about that guy's name, nickname being the Big Ragu, and juxtaposed it together.
So did you ever have a nickname?
Psycho Seth. That was Brent Boyer, the Jets offensive or special teams coordinator.
Dude, that's awesome.
That's a good one. Psycho Seth.
Rod Wright's the defensive line coach for the Texans, former UT football player. Mm-hmm. Good. I there's some things the Texans defensive line is doing this year. You can tell as a result of drill work in practice. I think he's done a really good job with some of the finer aspects of the D-line technique. So yeah. I'm glad that he also is good at coming up with nicknames for guys.
Yeah, as long as they don't show up, you know, doing cosplay stuff before a game. I know that was the linebackers, not the D-line. John asked me what I would nickname you, Seth, and I said the Big Intellectual.
Ugh.
Oh wow, the disgust.
That sounds awful. Like am I wearing like a tweed? Tiny hipster hat and like in a blazer that's a little too tight.
With patches on the elbows.
Take it as a compliment.
I would call you, and this is going to come up later in the show, but I came up with one for you, the Reaper, because you tell everybody to go die.
Mm. Oh yeah, that's good.
That's a good one. Better than the Intellectual, the Reaper, for sure.
Yeah. We've run into a problem with the Amazon fulfillment service where I was going to put out Go Die t-shirts, but apparently Amazon doesn't like violence or wishes of death upon people on their apparel.
They're so picky. Yeah.
I think we know people that can probably help you.
Probably. All right, Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you as well, right. From the Big Ragu.
Yeah!
All right, we are done. We are out of time. Oh, look, cue cards on the wall. You're listening.
Oh, wow.
To KILT AM, KILT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey sports station.